by the name Joe Exotic has agreed to pay a Florida animal sanctuary nearly $1 million to resolve a trademark infringement lawsuit.
You know the saying that you get your day in court? Well, I don't feel we got our day in court.
Tiger Crisis Podcast, Episode 4. We are the podcast that follows Tiger King, Netflix documentary. We do admit at this point in the podcast that there are some limitations to having a podcast based completely as an after show for a show that probably won't have a second season. So we'll admit that fault as we move forward here. And we'll figure out what happens after we get through this whole process of the Tiger King situation. But right now, as part of coronavirus, COVID, the lockdown, the quarantine, we hope that you're all being safe out there and being responsible as people. And there's really nothing more fun than to binge these ridiculous shows and try to understand what it is that we're doing as a society to make these things gain the value that they have. I think it is very indicative of the times that this Tiger King thing has exploded the way that it has. I mean, there are plenty of pages on Reddit, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter that are like basically defending Joe Exotic, talking shit about Carol Baskin, and then sort of like trolling Jeff Lowe. If you do a quick, easy Google search at this point, you can find Jeff Lowe's advertised phone number, and it seems that he is taking phone calls from anyone who happens to be a woman and wants to FaceTime. That's kind of where his life is at right now. So looking at the Tiger King documentary, episode 4, it is called Playing with Fire. And as you guys know, it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek play on words, but then it also ends the episode with this big fire that no one seems to be responsible for, or as the documentary makers will have it, you think everyone is responsible for. The big thing with episode 4 is, as a whole, what really happens is this is the first time we kind of feel sorry for Joe Exotic. The big outline of episode 4 is that Joe, who we're in love with, we open up the episode with one of Joe's songs. It's him doing his country song. By the way, he has a wonderful catalog. It looks as though that there's songs called I Saw a Tiger, My First Love. There's that one where he's claiming that Carol fed her husband two tigers. Then he came out with a bunch of songs in 2020 from prison, one of them called Because You Love Me, another one called Here Kitty Kitty. So he has a catalog now. I also think Joe has lockjaw. I've never seen somebody who sings in the intonation and tone. I don't know the words I want. He has a completely different singing voice in country than he does in real life. It's very strange. He speaks like a guy who does meth in Oklahoma, and then he sings like an angel from Texas. And what's funny is in the beginning of episode 4 is actually they were following him around in his car. He's got like a full-size tiger in the front seat of his truck, and he's karaokeing. He's carpool karaokeing to his own song. And even when he sings it himself in his car, he does not have his own singing voice. So that's a super interesting thing. What we really learn in this episode is that Joe Exotic would have done anything to become famous. And what's amazing is now he is famous. There's something about this character that is like rootable. I don't know. Like we want him to win in a lot of ways. We'd like, and episode 4 really goes a long way towards letting us feel bad for him. But I think it's weird. I think we really need to have a real discussion in the world about the fact that this is what entertainment has become. We only sort of envy people and respect people that we would never hang out with. The mark of reality TV now is sort of designed to make us feel better about ourselves. And in my relationship now and who I'm quarantined with, I have to keep pointing out the fact that watching these sort of like rumor mill type shows with negativity, like I'll wake up and the TV's on like one of these entertainment, Bravo, E, like these type of channels, and it's just people arguing. And there's something that we've created that makes us feel good that we just watch people argue all day long. And what's super consistent in the Tiger King documentary is that throughout the entire thing, everyone has a problem with everyone. It's like the most like job, college, high school, ticky-tacky, like rumor talking smack about anybody that you possibly could have. And it's become these people's identity. There's a guy, Rick Kirkman, who like agreed to film Joe so that he could also on the back end film a reality show. And he's there talking smack about Joe. We got Joe, who ends up devoting his entire life to trying to shut down another person, Carol Baskin, in her career. And then Carol spends the time to make her life about shutting down his life and his career. So it's just a weird element that we've created, I think, especially right now in the times that we're in the coronavirus and in the COVID-19 era, now that we're with loved ones and we're shacked up with people and we're all scared and some of us are losing people that we know and some people are coming down with this disease and the rest of us are just terrified of what could happen. And it really highlights like what's important in life right now. And this shouldn't be it, guys. Okay, as much as this is a fun podcast to produce, and as much as this is a fun show to watch, you watch this thing, and then when you realize during the episode that we're trying to feel bad for Joe Exotic, that's a weird position to be in, because it's a very needy narcissist man who makes everything about him and really wants to be the Tiger King. He wants this title to be real. A good portion of this episode was talking about how he just replays over and over again this sort of like superhero, like I think they call it like the God shot that they came up with him. They built him this big throne and they keep panning in, going up, you know, and then swooping in on him with this big superhero cinematic thing, calling him the Tiger King. And he ends up thinking that that's who he is and that's what the situation is. And that's who he needs to be. In this Instagram, TikTok, like internet famous society that we've created, this is a monster. And Joe, who's behind bars for a murder for hire scheme that never gets itself off the ground, that has no proof and no details, Joe is going to end up coming out of prison and being one of the biggest things on the planet. And that doesn't feel right to me, especially right now in these times. And as a comedian, you know, one of my main preoccupations is to try to figure out how to make tragedy hilarious. And that's, I mean, this documentary does it all on its own. The absurdity that's been created with these characters, the impersonations that have been going around, all of the things, they're there. But there is something that feels wrong about this piece of entertainment and the fact that this is going to be someone who, after this documentary and after this prison run, the way politics are shaping up, I find it far-fetched to think that it would be impossible for Joe Exotic to run for president. And then this thing with Donald Trump claiming that he's going to pardon Joe for fun, that sounds like a joke until you take into consideration who this president is. So there's just something wild going on in the air with this whole Tiger King documentary scenario. I think as a documentary creator, I think you have a responsibility to the viewership in some way. And I already argued after the first episode that I don't think that this is a true crime documentary in any way. I think it's a fully a reality show. But there's something that happens in this episode, and it's this big fire. Again, the episode is called Playing with Fire, episode 4 of Tiger King. And what happens is there's a fire on the premise, the GW Zoo, and it's in the middle of a big lawsuit, and it's in the middle of this guy, Rick Kirkman, creating a reality show for Joe. So Joe at this point in time has a reality show and he has his own live show, and the live show is basically him taking out his grief with Carol Baskin and making a scene, doing the thing with the Carol Baskin killing her husband, all these sorts of things. And a building burns down on the property and a bunch of animals die and a bunch of footage is lost. And as far as the documentary is concerned, they go as far as to blame Kirkman. They go as far as to blame Carol. They said Carol paid somebody to have the thing burnt up. They said that Joe could have burnt it up on his own. Really, as a documentary, they're not responsible in the way that you would want them to be as far as coming up with some kind of conclusion. So this episode largely is just sort of a mess, and it starts to feel like the hand of sympathy is being created again for Joe. So basically, if you don't remember, episode 4 is basically the saga of Joe Exotic deciding that he's going to start another company called Big Cat Rescue Entertainment because he's figured out that Carol Baskin has figured out Facebook. At this point in time, she's getting $20,000, $30,000 a week in Facebook GoFundMe pages. She's doing ads on Facebook. She's got all this money now from the husband funding and all the things that she was able to inherit in his death. So Joe basically starts a company that's almost the identical name as Carol Baskin. And then, of course, in 2 seconds, they find out that he's doing that because Carol and her crew start getting phone calls that are asking if people can come and pet cubs and all these sort of like Joe-related things. Joe has now taken up ads that have Florida numbers on them where he's in Oklahoma and she's in Florida, so he's got her Florida number now. He's got basically her name all the way to the end of it. He started a website called 911animalrescue.org, which I think is like one website away from Carol Baskin's, and the header on that website is looking for Don Lewis's remains, all of these things. So as soon as this breaks, Carol and her husband, Howard Baskin, sue Joe. And basically, with all this money that they have from all of the inheritance, they start a lawsuit against Joe. Admittedly, it sounds like their goal was to basically have Joe just stop using the name Big Cat Rescue Entertainment and stop infringing on their rights as a company. But instead, what happens is Joe, either in his stead of arrogance or in his misunderstanding the law, he decides that he's going to fight this thing. So Joe ends up, you know, doubling down on the situation, starts bringing more and more eyes to the website, more and more eyes to, like, anti-Carol stuff. He's doing all this anti-Carol stuff on his show. So now they're suing him also for, like, defamation and libel. And he's like holding protests in Florida rather than dealing with his own responsibilities at his GW Zoo. And as it turns out, it starts to seem, from the documentary's perspective, that Carol and Howard have put up about $1 million, in legal fees fighting Joe on this suit. Here's the sad thing. Because it's a bunch of people that really don't understand the law, and that might be my opinion, but if you watch a documentary and you hear these people talking, Joe is like, at the end of the result, is sort of like upset about that he didn't get his day in court. But Howard, the Baskin, the lawsuit creator, even said, like, all this guy had to do was stop using the name Big Cat Entertainment, and then the lawsuit would have been over. I think what a lot of people don't understand is, in a civil lawsuit, I can sue you as an individual, and, you know, especially not as a company. And if I win, That's a win, but anything that comes from a monetary perspective, because you're not a corporation, kind of cannot be collected. Like, there's no actual apparatus set up to get my money. I could sue you for $1 million and you could just never pay me. And there's sort of no other consequences, right? That's just sort of how civil suits work. So Joe ends up in this situation. He ends up getting sued by Carol and Howard. He doubles down. So he looks like a real piece of work because he's doing all of these things. He's calling Carol all these names. He's showing pictures of rabbits on the internet that Carol's feeding to tigers. He's showing up at Carol's front door in bloody rabbit outfits, putting it on the internet, doing everything he can in that sense. And the judge looks at this, says, we don't need a trial. This is shenanigans. And he grants the $1 million lawsuit for Joe. Now, Joe, as a response, then starts panicking and starts trying to figure out how to pay Carol and all these things for all of this stuff. So then there's this weird, like, Joe and Carol's husband, Howard, going back and forth trying to figure out how they're going to pay for the lawsuit, how Joe's going to pay for the lawsuit. And they tell him he's got to start paying X number of dollars a month. And here's where it gets real ugly. And then this is like the prime chunk of like starting to feel sorry for Joe and this kind of experience, is that Carol somehow gets a list of all of Joe's assets and then starts itemizing them and then asking for Joe to give them up. So she ends up taking a bus from Joe, which I think he might be living in at the time. She ends up taking, what else does she take from him? She takes a semi-truck from him. She basically shuts Joe's ability to go to malls and tour tigers and this sort of thing, which is a big part of his income, away from him. And then Joe, in his, like, surrounded by camera crew, not getting any good advice from anybody, surrounded by two dudes who might not be gay, who are his husbands, who are doing meth all the time, surrounded by a woman whose arm got eaten off, who then is so loyal to Joe that she just says it's cool as long as the cats don't get taken away. He's surrounded by all these people in this hick Oklahoma environment where nobody's really making good decisions. And then instead of trying to come to terms with the thing, he just starts taking videos of him taking items off of the Carol Baskin list and blowing them up. He said, Carol, you want my watch? And then he blows it up. Carol, you want my bed? And then he blows it up and puts it on the internet. Here's what gets real ugly. The Carol and Howard thing, and again, I don't know. I don't know what the real spin is on the documentary end of this, but this episode really, like, frames a situation where Howard and Carol are shitbags and Joe is just this sort of, like, sad, misunderstood and taken advantage of guy. So what ends up happening is Howard and Joe end up on the phone to start negotiating. And then in the midst of that whole thing, Howard and Carol start suing, like, groundskeepers at the zoo. They're suing, like, the janitor at the zoo. They sue Joe's mother. And there's this very sad scene in episode 4 where Joe's mother and father are, like, in a GoFundMe video talking about how they're out of money and they need some money to be able to fight Carol Baskin in the lawsuit. And then what's great is, of course, Joe's mother starts talking shit about Carol Baskin in a very let's just call her Mrs. Exotic kind of way. So the whole experience of that episode ends up becoming this sad tale of a man who doesn't understand the law, doesn't really understand what his life goal is. This is what's crazy is I know a lot of us don't ever figure out what we're supposed to do with our lives. But at the beginning of the documentary, at the beginning of the 4 years, you could argue that Joe has a thriving business. He's figured out a way, albeit kind of shady, to have employees that don't have anywhere else to go, give them meth, give them dick, give them Walmart meat for free, give them homes, give them places, give them tigers. I think he's running a couple hundred animals at the time around the park, keeping them alive. He's got bears, he's got tigers, he's got wolves. He's figured out this Walmart thing. He's a very ingenious man. He's figured out how to make this thing work. Again, albeit in kind of a shady, sketchy sort of like, if you have to get drugs and are meth addicted, figure out a way to get drugs every day, like that kind of realm. But he's making it work. And there's a respect level to that. And he's working hard at it. And then he gets all caught up in the Carol Baskin debacle. And he loses sight of running a zoo and running a responsible establishment for these animals. And even being the weird sideshow star that he was. I mean, what was great about Joe in the first four episodes is that he's running this business successfully. People are coming out in Oklahoma. I mean, look, Oklahoma touches New Mexico. Oklahoma touches Kansas. Oklahoma, I think, touches Missouri. It's a state away from, it touches Texas. It's a state away from like Colorado. I mean, this guy had the Midwest and whatever, you know, extending into sort of like that Rocky Mountain area, locked down for having like a weird backyard tiger park. And people were coming and people were spending money and people were there. They were petting cubs, all of the things. And he gets caught up in this lawsuit and he sort of loses to this woman who, let's be honest, Carol's a winner. Carol never loses. If you're her husband and it's not going good for her, she'll find a way to pull through. So that is sort of a big takeaway of the episode, is that Carol will not be beaten and she will do whatever it takes, limb, life, and dollar bill, to make sure that she wins. And she's manipulated this other man to being her sidekick and her bulldog. This whole episode four is like Carol's will spoken through Howard. That's what I think is super interesting. If you watch the episode, it's a bunch of interviews with Howard Baskin where she's sitting right next to him, almost as if he's her marionette. Every other interview with Carol prior to this moment in the documentary is her by herself telling weird stories, denying murders, all the things that she does. And then all of a sudden this episode, because Howard's involved in the lawsuit and sort of kind of the face of the lawsuit, Carol is there sitting next to him. I think it's the only interview in the documentary where it's two people side by side. And it's weird that only one of them is talking. And it feels weird. And it feels like Carol has this control over the guy. So it is. It's a weird episode. And it's largely around the Howard and Joe interaction, the Carol and Joe interaction through Howard. And then they keep throwing in this mix with this Rick Kirkham character who thinks he's figured out this great reality show that could exist called Tiger King, which is crazy because we watched exactly that. So, you know, in a sense, if Rick was responsible enough and vigilant enough and not coming on the documentary to talk shit about people, arguably he should have had this thing made 5 years ago. I mean, obviously, Joe is a character that we all kind of oddly root for and care about. It's just weird. I think Joe is somebody in all of our families. I think we all have this character in our family who shouldn't make it work, but somehow does. And whatever his secrets are, so however he makes the miracles that he makes and whatever magic he uses, you know, there's just this guy who somehow keeps landing on his feet like a tiger until he goes head to head with Carol Baskin. So the end of the episode is sort of this like Joe has his back on the wall. He doesn't know what to do. He's involved in this lawsuit that feels like he didn't need to be involved in. He's stuck with these payments that he's agreed to, $5,000 a month. Carol is asking for Joe to have his mother put her house up for collateral because Joe at this point doesn't own anything. They're telling Joe basically, look, you can't breed cubs or have cub petting, Joe says, look, that's my income. How do you expect me to get you $5,000 a month if I can't do those things? And then this weird character comes out of the woodwork at the end of this episode. And again, it's like we're two episodes in, three episodes in, then like we're doing a whole experience with Carol and her husband in episode three and the murder. Episode two is just sort of like this, who owns tigers and what are the sex games involved? Episode one is trying to introduce everybody. And then all of a sudden in episode four, this other weird benefactor comes out of the woodwork, this Jeff Lowe character, and all of a sudden all we know about Jeff Lowe is he drives a Lamborghini or Ferrari and impresses everybody. He puts tigers in Louis Vuitton purses and has his sex parties in Las Vegas where he has people and girls come up and pet tigers. And guys even on camera talking about, what did he say, a little pussy gets you a lot of pussy. So all of a sudden we get this other villainous character side by side with Joe. Jeff walks in, apparently, this is the way it's presented to us. Jeff walks in, says, look, I understand that you're a good dude, that you're being, like, sued and overrun by Carol. I got, like, five tigers that I need to put somewhere. Why don't I help you out? Why don't I flip the bill for all your lawsuits and we'll get you out of the deal? So Jeff Lowe walks in. They're on a phone call. Dealing with the $5,000 payment. Carol has just asked for Joe's mother's house. And Jeff Lowe says, F this, F that, C word this, C word that, and pays off, hangs up the phone, pays off Joe's lawyers at a discounted rate, writes a cashier's check, it dissolves the company, and in 5 seconds, all of a sudden, is the president of GW Zoo and from that moment becomes the new owner of Joe's entire legacy. So if you do look at the whole episode, it's just this sad man who gets taken advantage of in a lot of ways because of his weird greed, his weird want, need to be famous, and his weird like narcissism to create a celebrity around a thing that just should have been a fun sideshow backyard zoo. It really is weird because there are these zoos everywhere around the country. Like if I Google tigers near me, just right now, straight up. Okay. So first of all, I live in New York City, so I get a ton of zoos nearby. But then within three search planes, I get tiger cubs to buy. And buy exotic pets like it's an Amazon. Like I can just buy a tiger for $2,000. And then if you look at a map, best tiger sanctuaries in the U.S. There's one like right by me in New Jersey. There's one in Myrtle Beach. We know which one that is. There's two in Florida. We know which one of those is. There's one in, I guess, what does this look like? I think this is Louisiana. There's two in Indiana, two side by side in Texas, one in, I don't know, Nevada, two in California, one in Washington, one in, what looks like, Wisconsin. Where's this one? And then this one is in, this was called Wild Animal Sanctuary. And this one is in Denver, Colorado. I mean, these things are so crazily placed that you can just get to tigers from pretty much every state. The only place where there isn't one is Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, which nobody lives there. So there's no reason for anything to exist up there. And there's not any in Alaska because a fucking tiger's not going to live for very long in Alaska. It's going to go nuts, especially with the non-light, all-light thing. But at the end of the day, Joe becomes our hero in episode four. This is the moment. This is the shining moment where all of a sudden we are in the Joe Exotic business. Up until this moment, watching this documentary, you feel sorry for the man and you don't know how you feel about the guy. You're like, look, he's a meth guy. He's kind of fun. He's a total character. We know that. But I think we're sort of, we're looking at him as the hero of the story and definitely one of the most interesting people in the experience. And then all of a sudden he's our sad, like victim. And now we really, really start to feel for Joe. And because we know where this thing ends, we know that the whole thing ends with Joe being in prison. This sort of seems like the apt moment in the documentary to really launch the bigger picture, which is that we should be feeling sorry for Joe in all of his experiences. The opening sequence is, like I said, the tiger, Joe playing his own song, trying to sing to his own song. And then it's a recording of Joe calling from prison and talking about Carol Baskin's ability to be the number one search hit for anything, Tiger Cat, etc. So they're framing us as audience members in a very specific way to feel the way that we feel. So this is sort of the first time when you go back and watch where you realize what the manipulation of the documentary is. And again, I respect that. From a documentary filmmaker position, I respect taking a stance, making the audience feel a certain way. I think it's foolish of us as people to come out of watching a documentary feeling a certain way and thinking that we've come to that conclusion on our own. Every documentary has its own perspective that it's trying to stack. So whatever information that they put in whatever order, they want you to feel a certain way. And we have to respond to the fact that we are being manipulated. It doesn't always have a sinister goal in mind, right? And in this case especially, it's an entertainment-esque goal in mind. But we have to take consideration. We have to be responsible to understand that we are being manipulated, even if it's in the smallest way. So this thing, I mean, the whole show is still called Tiger King, and that's Joe's name. And we're in this position where we start to kind of wish Joe was our friend, and we kind of like all the weird quirkiness that he inhabits and exhibits. There's something fun about if Joe was your friend and you could just go hang out and like play with tigers, how that would be like a really enriching, fun thing in your life. There's so many people in this documentary that come forward at certain points and talk about being involved with Joe or being involved with tigers or being involved in experiences for the animals more than anything else. It's like Joe is one person that kind of isn't harming anybody. I mean, you would argue differently since he is right now in prison for paying somebody to harm somebody. But at this point in time, it seems very far-fetched that this whole plot could take place. And, you know, if you have watched the whole thing, as a lot of us have, it does feel, even at the end, like there are a lot of unanswered questions. And it feels like it's okay. And respectable to not get an answer as a law enforcement agency in these southern states. And I don't know why that is. The fact that we don't get an answer about what happened to Carol Baskin's husband from any law perspective, the fact that we don't get an answer about what happens to Joe's burnt up studio that supposedly lost all the footage, lost all these alligators. We don't know who did it. The Oklahoma cops basically are quoted being like, well, look, we know that it's an arson, but we don't have any more information. There's just something gross about this whole experience where it's just a lot of crimes being committed without any solutions. And if you've listened to the other episodes of this thing, the Tiger Crisis podcast, my claim is pretty much you can get away with most crimes, including murder, as long as you're a little bit smart about it. And I think a good contributing factor, a large contributing factor to being able to get away with large crimes is to do them in areas like rural Oklahoma, where there's really no reason to have a police force and a investigation team that actually has any skills. The smaller you go in a population perspective from a town, the more you realize that just sometimes those positions are filled because they needed to fill those positions. And don't get me wrong, I come from a small town. I come from a place called Baldwinsville, New York, and I'm sure there are plenty of people doing jobs that they're only doing because nobody else had the job. And I get it. Look, especially in this country, sometimes you just work in your family business. Sometimes you just do what's close and easy. Sometimes you just take an opportunity that's in front of you. But there's something weird about the fact that all of these crimes kind of go unsolved, and there's just this whole seedy experience surrounding the whole thing. But one thing is undeniable: Joe is a lovable dude. If you troll the internet now, like I do with the Tiger King memes and all the stuff, a lot of people want to be friends with Joe. And there's a lot of jokes out there about, you know, how all you need is a little bit of meth and a tiger, and then you got yourself a husband. But then there's also people actually like throwing themselves at Joe on the internet. Like, there are women that are saying, oh, well, it's too bad that Joe's gay because I could give him a good time. And there's just this weird, weird thing that's floating around. And when you really look at it, Joe represents a lot of what the United States is about. And, you know, I hate that that's true in a lot of ways, but, if basically you are committed to your convictions, you can kind of do whatever you want with your life. You can be a gun-toting, slur-yelling, party, whatever, tiger-owning, curse words spewing individual who runs for president with almost no experience in any of the things. And that's, the more we continue down this path, the more this continues to be true. The reason why this podcast is late, by the way, is because I was in the emergency room last night, and it was not for corona-related involvement, but it was very scary to be in there during a pandemic. It was very quiet and very contained, and I was in a very much of a different area than anybody else that would have had corona. But I got to speak to a lot of the people that work in that environment and see what is happening and how they feel about everything. And then I got to hear some nurses talking on their own, and they all started talking about the Donald Trump drinking disinfectant comments. Basically, last night, Donald Trump was quoted in the White House press room saying that UV radiation has been shown to kill bacteria, kill the virus. Is there any way that we can put this inside the body to kill the virus? And then the other thing is that disinfectants have been found to eliminate the virus immediately. Is there any way that we can put these into the body? And then he looked at his medical team and said, you know, this is something for medical doctors to figure out. Maybe you guys can get on top of this. And then one day later, everyone asked him, hey, what did you mean when you said, like, let's come up with a way to put disinfectant inside the body to kill the virus? And he said, well, obviously I was being sarcastic. And this is, the more you watch this documentary, the more you realize, especially when we get into the Joe Exotic presidential run, how close Joe Exotic is to our current president. And there's something wild about that. And I imagine that this will not be a very popular opinion, but there really is a Trumpian quality to doubling down whenever you're challenged. And this is what this entire episode 4 is about. Joe makes a mistake. He starts a company that is Big Cat Rescue Entertainment. It's clearly somebody else's business. And they go, you can't do that. Just don't do it. Just take your name off of it. Just stop your company, Big Tiger Entertainment. Nobody's asking you to do anything with the zoo. Just stop making videos with my fucking name. And he goes, no, I'm not going to do that. I have a right to do this. It's my country. It's my world. I can do whatever I want. And he just doubles down on the insults and the experience, and it ends up biting him in the ass because Carol Baskin will not lose. And throughout the whole process, he has 100 opportunities to bail, and he doesn't. And actually, the final solution is when Jeff Lowe steps in. Jeff Lowe pays off Joe's old attorney bills, $30,000. And then all he does is say, hey, cancel Big Cat Entertainment, like dissolve the company and start a new company and just put my name in the zoo. And then Carol and them have to start a new lawsuit. And then that's all they did. And then it was done, which means at any point during this lawsuit process, they said in the documentary that Joe spends $250,000 fighting Carol Baskin, and Carol ends up spending about $1 million of real money trying to sue Joe. At any point in this process, all Joe had to do was dissolve his company, change the name, and just go on with his life. And he didn't. Against all advice, against like all logic, just operated on pure ego and pure, no, I said it, so now my will be done type of energy. And that's the world that we're living in today. And Joe is a perfect example, and our president is a perfect example of how this behavior can sort of backfire. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I'm in lockdown. I'm in quarantine. And every single day there is an experience that is being cast across the internet that is a complete 180 from the day before. And the rhetoric is that the 180 that we did yesterday to today never happened. So there's just this push and pull that keeps going back and forth, where we have not accomplished as much as we've said we have, but then the whole thing is patting ourselves on the back. And that's a very American thing, to pat ourselves on the back, deny our responsibility, and to continue to just push through regardless of results. I think episode 4 is a perfect allegory for the fact that we need to take personal responsibility as human beings. Sometimes say that we're sorry, sometimes say that we did the thing that we did, accept the consequences and move forward. And if you don't do that, disastrous things can happen. Someone can sue you for $1 million. You can be convinced that they will get it, even though you know you don't have $1 million. And then someone else can just come out of the woodwork and buy your company for pennies on the dollar, out of sheer will and confusion. And then in a 6-month span, your entire life's work is gone because you're trying to outconfidence everybody. I don't know how that translates as much to what's happening, or the consequences, hopefully, that there will be for being this type of figurehead in this country. But we'll see what happens moving forward. To say nothing of the fact that it is an interesting period of time. I don't think there is ever been a better period of time for Joe Exotic, Mr. Tiger King, to be our misunderstood victim hero. I think if this program came out 10 years ago, Joe would have been an easy punchline, and there would have been no love and emotion behind it. But I think we are in a very specific period of time where this is Joe's 15 minutes to become the greatest Tiger King he could become. And we've done it. So this is episode 4. This is Tiger Crisis. We're trying to figure out more and more what we want the format of this thing to be. I think we're going to try in the future here to get some interviews with some of the cast members of the program, and so on and so forth. But up until this point, there's a lot of dense material in this documentary that needs to be sifted, and we're going to try our best to do it. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. We're on Anchor app. It's where we create the podcast. And we're on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio. We got some YouTube content. Thank you guys for participating. If you want to support directly, there are links all over the internet for ways that you can donate to us and be a part of this program. If you want to send us your questions, comments, Dan@TigerCrisis.com.